Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Smile.
Smiles for the camera, please. Yeah,
smile, you're on radio.
I feel like my entire week has been, you know, the Steve Carell gift from American Office. All I can do is try to put on a brave face. One of those, hasn't it, really? Right, let's go. Hello, so the longest double game week in history has finally concluded and we're back to podcast trailing in its wake. Imagine the last time we did this, we'd not heard of Sea Shanty TikTok, lads. Amazing, really. Anyway, I'm not sure we've ever seen a week with such contrasting fortunes, and while many basked in the glory of John Stone's brace, others slunk off in a sulk at John Stone's no-show as the harsh binaries bit. To talk about it, the band is back together, having just about survived it all. Nick, you all right?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I think this game week certainly was a lot of prolonged pain for us. I kind of missed the days, as you said, of just getting it all over and done with between the hours of 3 and 4:30 on a Saturday. But yeah, we'll get on to that in a little bit. Just to remind listeners who we are, of course, Who Got the Assist. Make sure to join our mini league. The code is CPSULF. We're joined, of course, by Anthony FPL Stag. How are you?
Well, thanks. Yeah, definitely one of those game weeks for all of us where, you know, at least we have a global pandemic to put things into perspective so we can move on from it at least. But anyway, look, this pod, the agenda, look, we've had multiple mini pods with very short turnarounds. So we finally got a proper pod back with all the accompanying sections to boot, including correspondence. So it's back with a bang as well with our first audio submission with a great poem coming from an Irishman, but who's not living in Ireland right now. For this week's main discussion, we're going to be looking at effective ownership and how much we should be paying attention to both effective ownership itself and its effects, which, of course, are not the same thing. There will, of course, be listeners' questions and plans for next game week at the tail end of the pod. But before that, we have the Gamer Reviews and Market Forces. Lads?
It's a bit of an interesting game review this week. I'm well aware, and congratulations at the risk of sounding like the Come Dine With Me meme. Well done if you did very, very well and got triple figure score. As you may have guessed, none of us did. And we're fine. We're fine. We really are fine. The finest person on the pod is Nick. How did your week go?
Oh, dear. Yeah. So I think I scored 81 points in the end, but I also took a minus 8. So 73 nets in total. My rank has fallen pretty heavily. I was about 48K, I think, before this game week. Now I'm at 120K. So more than doubled. Not great at all. Had lots of problems with my team. Only one player scored a goal this week for me, which was Harry Kane, a single game weeker. Ruben Dias did all right in the defence, picked up 18 points, a couple of clean sheets and an assist. But apart from that, really not a lot to shout about. Picked up a nice Martinez clean sheet, at least tonight, but damage was already done. And Robbo got a clean sheet as well. But yeah, the midfield, dreadful. Suchek blanking, Fernandez blanking, Salah blanking. Adams in forward line blanking, and also I brought in De Bruyne on a hit. Obviously, he didn't play. Well, he did play in the second game. It came off in the 58th minute, so 1 point in that game. And also had Kurt Zouma, who did a complete no-show as well, which means I get Bissouma off the bench for 1 point. Lucky me. So, yeah.
But you don't get FA Cup points with Bissouma.
I know, exactly. But we'll move on swiftly to Tom. I think you're up next. I don't think you did much better.
No, I only got two more points than you. It's the procession of misery continues. 85 minus 8 of 77. I got no goals throughout this double game week. Zero, zilch. I also had no City defenders, and I also had no Antonio. I also used my triple captain on Kevin De Bruyne, who got an assist in the first game, as well as missing out on quite a few. And the second game, he did his ankle in 57th minute, which was just fantastic. I know, I got my COVID vaccination that day. You know, Donald Trump, it was his last day in office, and I thought, good things come in threes. Well, I guess got 3 points from him because I had him triple captain him, but it didn't quite work out. And what was really galling, okay, it's one of those things where you're kind of like, because I had so much time to tinker for the double game week, I kind of got trapped into I could have had it itis, basically, because I had two choices. I removed Son, Rafinha and Alioski, and I had two possible permutations. One was one I went with, which was KDB, Dawson and Suchek, because I was just, oh, you know, I need to get West Ham in. The other iteration was KDB, Stones and Emile Smith-Rowe, which I'd been able to do perfectly. And I kind of went for the first one, and I think I did myself out of about 25 points just through that brutal binary there of just going for option A over option B. It's just one of those things, really. But yeah, really annoying. I can't remember a double game week where I've had no goals. I have the likes of Vardy not doing anything, Suchek deciding to actually be a defensive midfielder for once. It's Fernandez, Salah, all these players just blanking. It was quite a difficult week as well because it was so long, like waiting for the red arrow just to kind of be locked in. But there we go. As Nick said, we move, which I think is just one of those horrible phrases people say when they're a little bit upset and want to pretend they're fine. Anthony.
Yeah, some people say sod off as well. Cut that out. No, moving on to me, I guess, a ray of sunshine here with 98 points minus 4, so 94 in total. That's actually enough for the smallest of small green arrows. That's the second week in a row that I've gone up about 10k, so 277k to 269k. Effectively, I think most of my team performed as I would have hoped, only that I had Cancelo, not Stones, and I had Watkins, not Antonio. So there's the guts of a 30-point swing there between those two choices, which, of course, look, you make these choices. Cancelo was something that I was someone who I've had on my side for a while. The side grade was never on, and I knew that there was a day that Cancelo would get benched. Unfortunately, it came in the double game week. Watkins, on the other hand, that was a decision I made just before this game week, trying to figure out who to bring in for DCL. I didn't trust Antonio to play both games as he did. Simple as. So I brought in Watkins, who had slightly better fixtures going forward and looks like he'll have double game weeks kind of coming down the line. Didn't quite work out as well this double game week, but I'm still quite happy with him for the longer run. So it's okay. Martinez, clean sheet. Cancelo, one clean sheet. Diaz, obviously, with a pretty decent haul. Dallas, I put into my team instead of Saka. There was a few points lost there along the way, but whatever, that was, you know, the decision I made, and I'm happy with it overall, in spite of the fact it didn't work. Soufal, 12. I had De Bruyne a captain, didn't triple captain. I didn't change my mind from the last pod, so that was fine. 16 points there. Salah, Fernandez, Suchek, Watkins with only one goal, Kane with only one goal as well. So look, it was a fine week. It could have been a very bad week, as my co-host can attest to. It could have been a fantastic week, and you could have had 40, 50, 60 points more than this. But overall, I think I'm quite happy to have escaped this whole entire, double blank game week, double game week zone without having used any hits and only taken green arrows from it, in spite of the fact that they were tiny ones. So I think I can be pretty happy with that overall, and well set for the rest of the second half of the season.
Hashtag points. That's what I've got to say to that. Right. I didn't say my rank, by the way, and that's because I haven't looked and I won't be looking next week.
Sorry, darling. I can't read seven figures.
I'm sure. I think it is still six.
I'm joking. I haven't checked.
I didn't want to look. Right. Let's move on swiftly to the market forces with Kevin De Bruyne, Jamie Vardy, both notably injured since the midweek action. What's been going on, Nick?
Yeah, it's been pretty busy actually in the market in the wake of the double game week. And I think many managers are not really waiting around. They're just cracking on with their moves. And obviously there's been a few injuries as well, which has spurred the market on. I guess starting with who's been sold, it's obviously De Bruyne and Vardy both being sold heavily because of injuries. So 550,000 transfers out for De Bruyne and 350,000 transfers out for Vardy. Also the likes of Calvert-Lewin being quite heavily sold with 320,000 transfers out. I believe he might be coming back into fitness now, and Zuma didn't play, of course, so he's been heavily sold, 220,000 transfers out, and Salah as well being quite heavily sold, 160,000 transfers out for him, having blanked now in five games in a row, last scoring in that game week I didn't own him, where he got 16 points in 33 minutes. But I'm not bitter about that at all. The players being brought in, of course, it's John Stones, that 27 points, ridiculous return for the double game weeker. I think he was going to be heavily bought in anyway this week just because of City's fixtures, but 400,000 transfers in for him now at the time of recording, which is pretty ridiculous. Likes Madison, actually, is quite an interesting one. He's the second most transferred in player right now with 295,000 transfers in, three goals in three games for him. Antonio, another double game week hero there. He's got obviously scored two goals. He's third on the list. And it's Kane and also Gundogan. The cut price KDB replacement, who's 6.4 million cheaper and scored 41 goals in the last four game weeks, has had 200,000 new transfers in for him as well.
Yeah, to be honest, I think what you're seeing is just an awful lot of people reacting to the double game week and reacting to injuries. It was they're fairly sensical transfers, I guess, from that perspective. I think the increased activity, like these numbers of transfers in and transfers out, are much higher than we'd usually see when we're doing market forces. But I think that just kind of tells you how long the game week has been, and a lot of people would have made their transfers as they usually do habitually on a Thursday or Friday, and we've just kind of seen those already wash through a little earlier than we usually would ahead of a game week.
Yeah, I was surprised to see the rises and falls already happening with FA Cup action to come. But, I mean, as you said, it's habitual, isn't it? And managers are creatures of habit. Right, let's move on and move on to the main topic this week, which is about effective ownership. So, as I mentioned earlier, things went from excitement to bore off from us. And a lot of that was rooted in effective ownership, which we're going to take advantage of having time to do a proper pod to chat about today and answer, you know, what do we think of effective ownership in FPL? This game week was a really kind of harsh binary, wasn't it, for us? We didn't have Stones, that's for sure. Maybe I didn't have any City defence myself. No, Anthony had Diaz, and Nick did had some coverage there. Didn't have Antonio. And it kind of reminded me as well of the Project Restart as well. And there are a few game weeks where if you didn't have Antonio, you didn't have Sterling, well, you didn't get Green Arrow, you were absolutely screwed. So what is effective ownership? One of those things that you do hear kind of floating around. I'll do my best to define it here. Hopefully I can kind of make it as simple as possible. But effective ownership are points you gain or lose against the average. This can be versus the overall game as an average, in your kind of local rank area as being a defined sample, or another defined sample, for example, the top 10K. This can also be over 100%. So effective ownership can be over 100%, factoring in captains and triple captains, which of course doubles or triples the amount of people who effectively own a player. This becomes live during a game week. It's not live, it's only projected pre-game week. So you get the base ownership stats, then that kind of kicks in once the deadline goes. You find mistakes from things like live rank and fantasy football fix. Simply put, it shows which players and teams will make the most impact towards you getting green arrow if you own them, and conversely, of course, which are more likely to lead to a red arrow if you don't own them, they do something. How this works out is pretty simple. So here's a good works example. Stones, my bet noir this week, is owned by 40% of people overall. But Stones this week, just gone in the double game, it was owned by 23.84% of people active in my rank tier. So that becomes kind of our sample. He scored 27 points, which is 6.4 points against me. Why is that 6.4? Well, if literally everyone around me had Stones at my rank and I didn't, i.e. 100% effective ownership against me, I'd be 27 points down to everyone around me. But as it was, he was owned by 23.84% and 100% of FPL Twitter, of course. That works out at 27 times 0.384 equals 6.4 points. Okay, so that's kind of how my rank got sailed there. So with the concept in mind, how is it helpful to FPL managers and how might it be a hindrance to FPL managers? I guess is what we're going to talk about. Let's talk about the positive upside first. Anthony, tactical application, risk calculation, how do you think effective rank can impact managers positively?
So yeah, from the upside perspective, I think primarily with your tactical approach, you should probably be led by your underlying stats, your eye test, the old reliables. But it is still important to know the inevitable downside of any moves you make, and knowing that downside to turn it into a positive and make more educated transfers as a consequence. So you can look at, for example, you know, consider it the opportunity cost, the player that you don't pick up, deciding who that player is that you buy and who the player is that you didn't buy can be aided by looking at effective ownership and understanding who's going to hurt you more. For example, right now, if you were looking at buying a Manchester City defender, because Stones is already quite popular, and of course, as we just said, in Market Forces, he's being bought in en masse. You know that the opportunity cost of not going with Stones instead of going with the likes of Diaz, it could be quite high. And I think that's kind of something that you need to keep in mind no matter what. And so tactically, that's where effective ownership, I think, from a transfer perspective and with captaincy, can come particularly in handy.
I do find it very useful, and I think when you're kind of assessing the danger points both inside and outside of your team, so you can look at it as a positive light. For instance, you know, the likes of Later, as we've talked about previously on the pod, famous upside chaser, targeting some of those low-owned players like Martial to try and gain an added edge against their rivals just because of low effective ownership. And you can talk about other players, for instance, you know, likes of Mahrez, who might have a particularly low ownership if you're looking for a specific differential any week, as opposed to sort of following the masses, I suppose, with, you know, targeting likes of Stones.
Both your points are really good there. Like, Anthony, covering transfers primarily, you know, you said you consider the players you buy, you didn't buy, and you kind of make that a judgment, don't you, of who's going to hurt you more. I like what you said there, Nick, about giving you a bit of an added edge to the understanding of what's going on. I think captain particularly is where effective ownership really crystallizes, because you're able to kind of see, if my captain bangs this week, I'm going to make one hell of a gain. Or on the other side of it, if my captain bans this week, I'm going to be in the same boat as everybody else. And you can therefore kind of assess, as Anthony said, the risk reward, the opportunity cost of going with that out there punt versus going for the kind of the herd pick, I suppose. Away from the individual, there are other ways of looking at this too, because there are, for example, in defence, cases for saying, you know, you should probably look at that as a unit, as Adam Pritchard said in question for us. So effective ownership of a defence versus single player could be quite useful. So thinking kind of this season, Southampton defence, when McCarthy was an octopus and keeping out everything, owning him or KWP was a good idea. Last year, Nick Pope, owning him or someone like Charlie Taylor was a good idea. And this is where we kind of had that kind of old idea of compound differentials, remember them? So the idea was that if everyone's got one or two players, and having that third player and kind of the impact of having the set, therefore it was a thing that set you apart. So think about the old days when Lallana, Firmino and Coutinho were all plausible to own in tandem, or Kane, Ali and Eriksen, or maybe Rose from Spurs that year. Nick, defence-wise, I mean, is it something that you look at in terms of effective ownership? I mean, James Justin this year, for example, you're not very happy with, have you?
Yeah, James Justin certainly has been pretty punishing in terms of his effective ownership, just because of the sheer amount of people that own him. So, for instance, this week he scored 14 points, which was 6.44 effective points against me. In fact, it was Leicester really and West Ham that just really punished me this week. No other team really did any impact on me, but it was West Ham and Leicester. So West Ham was 12.97. There was a gain from that Premier League team against me because I only had Suchek as my coverage. And Leicester, I didn't own anyone, so they had a gain of 9.39. All these managers around me getting all of those James Justin points, a few Vardy points sprinkled in there as well, just catching me out completely. And generally this week, obviously I did pretty badly, but I think, you know, you raised some interesting cases. I think with Chilwell, for instance, this season, he's had such a high ownership and he's always been on my sort of threat table, so to speak, but I've never really been too concerned because I've had coverage in the Chelsea defence with Kurt Zouma. And obviously with Southampton defence as well, I had Kyle Walker-Peters. So when I saw the likes of McCarthy sitting there on the, you know, danger list, as we put it earlier, or the likes of Yannick Vestergaard, I was less concerned. But ultimately as well, when you're talking about the defence, you're not just talking about one player doing the damage. It could be multiple players. So this week with West Ham, there were Fabianski owners, there were Soufal owners, you know, there was Dawson owners out there and Cresswell owners. And that really just compounded and caught me out to a certain extent. So you have to think about when you're covering the defence, if there's plenty of players that plenty of managers own, you're really at danger. And I think you got also got caught out, didn't you, Tom, I suppose, with the City defence as well and their double clean sheet.
Yeah, as a reminder of, you know, like not only Manchester United defenders in the past. I remember when Phil Jones one year just became an absolute must own because they just kept grinding out those clean sheets under Mourinho.
Maybe we didn't throw in this year's key example with the defence was Chelsea, where there was a point where their defence had an effective ownership of over 100%. So basically your first Chelsea defender, the first clean sheet that you got from Chelsea was just utterly defensive. It just held your rank and you needed really that second Chelsea defender to get any gains. And that was mostly thanks to Chilwell and Zuma, as you noted, but there was, you know, obviously there were other options in that Chelsea defence too that some people went for. But yeah, as you say, Tom, the attacking side is the other side of this. And I think the best example that we've seen so far this season is Son and Kane, where there was a point where having both of them didn't necessarily get you a green arrow unless you'd captained one of them as well, because they were both so popular. They were both in so many teams that were doing well, let's say, in your usual rank tier for active managers, and they were so commonly captained. If you didn't basically get those 3-point streams from the two players, you found that you weren't actually going anywhere. So that gives you a good idea of, how, from an attacking perspective, how important they can be with elite players. But they're also important when it comes to thinking about your cover picks, because it comes from the perspective of assessing the value of that cover. That, okay, you have your top player, which would be, for example, with a Manchester United, would be Bruno Fernandes, but you have to assess how much value you could get from the likes of Marcus Rashford and to what extent he could cover Bruno Fernandes' points if he does well. And there comes a point where Bruno Fernandes, for example, is so popular, highly owned, that your cover is no longer a cover and is actually just a discrete tactical choice against the popular player. And it's up for you then to, you know, decide to beat him or join them on the Fernandes pick and continue perhaps with your discrete, not a cover pick anymore, Rashford. But it's effective ownership that allows you to really assess that, to understand whether Rashford is the one that's gaining you points, but if he's not gaining you points compared to the amount that Bruno is continually hitting you for, it's just not worth it.
Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking along the same lines, actually, of Bruno and Rashford, and it kind of links in, I guess, with talisman theory to a certain extent, because Bruno is the talisman. He's the one you want. Obviously, you can try and cover Bruno with Rashford, but, you know, Bruno's actually outscored Rashford by 47 points this season, which is pretty ridiculous considering Rashford's not really having a bad season. He's got 7 goals and 5 assists to his name, but still, he's still being outscored by a whole 47 points. And, you know, I've made mistakes in the past a little bit as well. I mean, this season, I tried to perhaps cover Salah with Jota, which was working okay until he got injured. But in previous seasons, I've made mistakes such as trying to cover Sanchez with Ozil in the infamously poor double game week for me. And, you know, so it's very, you have to be very careful with these sort of things when you're covering the midfielders. I think certainly with the defenders, you can cover other defenders with, because obviously the clean sheet points are all kind of shared, but with the attackers and the midfielders, with the element of talisman theory, I think there's a little bit more risk in that kind of strategy.
Yeah, no, certainly is. You're very, very right on Bruno and Rashford. And I love the Sanchez-Ozil callback there, Mesut Ozil.
Hazard-Pedro as well. That was one that killed me. I was on Pedro instead of Hazard.
I remember that. That was in Hazard for the hat-trick, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I was in Greece for that. Anyway, I think you were, and just pulling back to what you said, Anthony, a minute ago, I think you were right on picking up on the lads, Son and Kane, because that's the biggie, isn't it, in terms of this effective ownership malarkey. They've got a huge base ownership. So Kane, 45% at the time of recording, Son, 58%. So if there's a captainable game week for Spurs, you're often looking at over 100% effective ownership for both players. That means you don't gain by owning, indeed only slightly gain by captaining. The whole thing reeks of, you know, downside protection, arse covering effectively. Just as a case in point for my team, for example, there's 2 times this season I've gone without Spurs. The first being the game week 9 wildcard. My rank did improve actually from game week 9 to now, but I haven't really had, I had Son actually, but I haven't had Kane and Son together. Kane scored 62 points and Son scored 65 points. The guys that I chose to bring in were KDB, who scored 68 actually, and Vardy, 57. Now, that's a bit of a blunt way of looking at it. Let's have a look at one game week in particular. Game week 12, a game week I actually sold Vardy on, so he got 12 points there. So on that week, Spurs beat Arsenal 2-0. Boo. Son scored 13 points against Arsenal and Kane scored 12. I had neither of those players, so the effective points against me was absolutely huge. So I absolutely pummeled, because the guys who were on my side effectively here were Dominic Calvert-Lewin with 5 points and Kevin De Bruyne with 3. So I lost out on 17 points there, throwing a high effects ownership for both players. And there was a 500k rank loss right there due to not having those players. So I mean, there's an element of it being a hygiene factor to own them both, unfortunately, this season. They have been so consistent. There's only been 11 blanks between them this season. And that's what's kind of creating that unique sticking power with them, which pulverizes you each week if you don't own them. They do something. And I wonder whether this links nicely to the negative side, sort of a hindrance, because if you've got this sort of high effects venture of players and it's a known thing, does it create this sort of, you know, herd mentality and kind of foster the template and mean that beige play, I guess, gets rewarded, Anthony?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. And maybe this is a problem with using effective ownership to lead your transfer decisions, is that if FPL was about trying to create the perfect template team, then yeah, you would work solely based on effective ownership. And of course, you would do quite well from that, presumably, if the template is going well, because albeit marginally, the compound differential of having that team would lead you along nicely, because nobody else would have, you know, necessarily the exact template team that you have as things tend to shift around. So there is, of course, an issue with leading everything with effective ownership. But at the same time, there is great value in what the likes of Fantasy Football Fix or Live FPL offer you, which allows you to look at ownership and especially effective ownership in order to base on your picks. And it helps you to mitigate risks. It's, as we've noticed, particularly useful for defenders who, of course, score as a unit as opposed to just as individuals. Not as useful when you've got defenders who get as much attacking returns as, let's say, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robbo would have got last season, or Robbo continues to do this season. And it's also very useful, of course, for making transfers, especially, I think, from a defensive perspective, i.e. to fortify your rank, because you know the players that are hurting you. For example, for me, it's James Justin as a player who just continues to hurt me. And it seems like I'm really making a bold choice to go on without him, even though I had him earlier in the season. And like many people, was afraid of Ricardo Pereira coming back. So this is the problem with effective ownership, is that, of course, it's extremely useful and you should pay attention to it. But it's not the be-all and end-all, and FPL is still about picking up points and enjoying the game, not just maximizing yield from popular picks and reducing risk. We are FPL managers, not actuaries.
Yeah, I think the fact that effective ownership is so tactical and kind of fosters this gamified reading of the game makes it feel so sort of unmagical and very sort of clinical. And some people just don't like that, in the same way that, you know, stats had a bit of a blowback when they first came out. You know, the famous Jeff Stelling rant against XG. I mean, there is kind of a fluffy side there as well with effective ownership. So as usual this year, I'm doing badly. Sigh, little violin comes out. And I found it really hard this year, particularly, like, because you've got so many games to watch and you've only got 11 players playing. And I've said this before, but you've only got 11 players for you and innumerable ones going against you. Watching every game, you know, or maybe, you know, loads more than normal, it really heightens those sort of sliding doors moments where your player could have got something, especially clear of KDB on the triple captain this weekend. This week. And it deepens, at least for me, that sense of sucker punch when a player I don't own happens to return. And basically, all of this for me is fueled by my understanding of effective ownership. Like, I have players I know I really don't want to score, as well as players I overlooked, like Stones, as I mentioned earlier on. And you know, I wish I had the personality to watch games and kind of not think about things that way and not think about fantasy football. And some may be like, oh, shut up, you saddo, just enjoy the football. But I just can't do it anymore, because I'm, you know, obviously deep into the FPL. So I mean, I must admit, this week I hit a bit of a brick wall with it, and there was a bit of morbid curiosity of watching my rank fall and fall, but really didn't feel good. So I've actually removed Fix from my phone and I've stopped checking live rank like during the week. It's just too much, and I might kind of stop checking Twitter a little bit as well. I've got no problem with people posting their points and stuff like that, but I mean, for me, it was just one of those things where I, especially when De Bruyne went off, that was a moment where I was just like, right, you know, I've got to think about this a little bit better. Obviously that's through the lens of me doing poorly. Like, if I was doing well, probably the polar opposite. I'd be loving looking at my live rank going up and probably be posting to Twitter as well. But yeah, I mean, that's just an example of how perhaps effective ownership can have like a negative psychological effect on managers. Sorry, Nick, if you've been waiting patiently, what's your view on all this?
I think, yeah, you explained it pretty well. I think obviously I had a pretty shoddy game week as well, and it kind of makes you not want to go on social media when you kind of see this slow burn of people celebrating their points over the course of the week. And that's just mainly because of the way the schedule's worked out. Especially this particular game week has been the sort of longest game week in history, hasn't it? And one of the most painful ones. But I think, you know, sort of moving back, I guess, to sort of effective ownership and sort of, as you said, the reinforcement of herd behavior. You know, I looked at like one player, for instance, and this is Patrick Bamford, and this is a player I haven't owned all season, but every game week I go on to Live FPL and I can see that Bamford has about a 78% or 80% ownership around my rank tier. And you know, that adds a fear element every time I see him on the ball, and he gets plenty of chances, doesn't put many of them away, thankfully, but he does get plenty of chances and makes it sort of very scary, I guess, watching Leeds attack with him. And you know, it's the whole idea of bringing in Bamford just because of fear is just so lame, isn't it, ultimately? And it does make you think, am I gonna, if I wanted to do a transfer, for instance, get rid of Shea Adams finally and bring in Bamford, you know, am I doing it purely out of fear and the effective ownership, or am I actually doing it because I think he's the best pick that I can afford? And you know, reality is I might want to actually do something a little bit more exciting, maybe like bring in Edson Cavani or something like that, or Lacazette, or even someone like a cheeky punt on Neil Mopay. But it's not worth it, is it? Because you know, you've got that risk of Patrick Bamford getting that haul and absolutely ruining your rank. And I guess that's kind of like, you don't really want to play FPL with fear, do you? You want to play with for fun and bring in random players and have a bit of a laugh, but the whole concept of effective ownership kind of makes you think, actually, should I just do the safe thing and bring in Patrick Bamford?
Yeah, it's just the risk versus reward thing, isn't it, writ large? So, you know, my risk is there's an opportunity in going for a down the path less trodden, but obviously that can then bite you spectacularly, brutally, as we've seen in kind of all sorts of seismic 50-50s going wrong this season. I guess that kind of brings us back to the overarching question here, like, what do we think about effective ownership? For me, I think it's something that I completely agree with Anthony was saying right at the top about it being a really useful kind of tactical tool which helps you to understand and kind of plan your moves, plan your captaincy, and it's just kind of another element of information in the arsenal of an FPL manager. But I do think that there's kind of limits with it, especially if you're not doing very well. If you're doing very well, then it's obviously kind of one of those kind of great friends to have. For me, it's a bit of a false friend at the moment. I just don't want to know. And I'm kind of shunning it right now, put it that way. But I think that kind of through my own personal lens, and I think that effective ownership is one of those things that I do really like. It's just one of those things as well that from a watching football perspective, I wish I didn't know about, and I do sometimes rue the day I learned what effective ownership was. But I suspect that's going to be the answer you'd expect of me. Anthony, I suspect you've got a more bullish view on it.
Definitely, I think I have a much more positive view of effective ownership than the two of you guys, but maybe that's just the game week speaking as much as anything else, that at least at the end of the day, because I knew that I had Watkins and Martinez to come and I was on about a grey arrow, I reckoned that my arrow was going to go green at the end of this game week, even if I just got appearance points. So I felt that a little bit better having looked at the effective ownership and knowing what was going to happen. But overall, effective ownership, I think, is extremely useful from a transfer planning and captaincy planning perspective, basically allowing me to figure out what I might miss out on if I make a certain decision. And whilst that's a very, you know, negativist outlook, I use it to try and propel my rank in a positive direction. And I think it's just that framing and how you use it and don't use it as a stick to beat yourself in the middle of bad game weeks. And you know, that does mean distancing yourself from Live FPL when things are going badly and trying to not be that guy who doesn't tweet when things are going badly, but inevitably doing a little bit of that along the way as well.
Yeah, I think it is something that we shouldn't really let it rule our thinking, but it is ultimately an important part of the FPL game and your strategy, and it's something that you do have to factor in when you're making your decisions. So for instance, if you're kind of in a higher rank, as I was earlier on in the season, I often look to consolidate that position as much as possible by targeting highly owned players. If you say you're more in the sort of 600k to 1 million rank, you're not going to be bringing in the players that are highly owned ultimately, because you're not going to make any gains on the guys in the top 10k if everyone owns James Justin, if everyone owns Antonio and Stones. You're going to be looking at other differentials, other picks to try and catch up or gain an edge. Or if you're in the top 100k, you might be more of a late riser type character and actually say, oh, no, not good enough rank for me. I want to be in the top 100, so I'm going to be targeting those differentials again and going for those players that perhaps can get you that biggest upside. So I think it is definitely an effective tool and something that should be considered, as long as you're not kind of madly refreshing live rank and getting in some sort of like doom scrolling of FPL for like a whole week.
Red arrow scrolling, yeah. All right, cool, good chat. Let's take a break there and move on to the correspondence and Q&A.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. As I said earlier, the code is CPSULF if you want to join. And yeah, it's a lot of change actually in the league. The top five all having used chips, got four bench boosters and a triple captainer. So in fifth place it's Gunnar Lemonen. He got 149 points this week, ridiculous score. So and he's climbed 54 places in the Who Got the Assist mini league as well. It's very impressive. In fourth, we've got another riser here with Nicola. He got 139 points, also bench boosted. In third, we've got Wallace Clark, 125 points for him, also bench boosted. In second, we've got Ryan Longstaff of the Longstaff brothers. He got 157 points, which is just ridiculous score, having bench boosted captain Sterling, so a little bit of a differential captain there as well. But number one, a familiar name, David Izzet with Hest Wham Untied, took a minus eight but got 127 points and triple captained De Bruyne as well. So really good score for him. He's now up to overall rank 144 in the world. So yeah, very, very impressive. Well done, mate.
Cool, yeah, very well done, guys. So I'm just jealous of those monster scores, to be honest. My time will come again. That's why I keep telling myself. Right. Speaking of something coming again, it is the correspondence. Yes, the section we thought we'd seen the back of, but no, it's back. Here it is, limping into view, the wolf we can't shake from our door. Anthony, what's going on?
Yeah, it's one hell of a poem. Yes, indeed, Tom. We've got the correspondence section. It's finally back after a few weeks where we couldn't fit it in because we just wouldn't be basically doing any of the correspondence justice if we fit it into a pod that had a shelf life of the guts of 24 hours, if even that, over the last while. But we've really made up for it with probably the most spectacular piece of correspondence thus far, if I was to say so myself, if I was to dare to do so. And it's come from a fellow Irishman, Gavin Doyle, who's actually living over in Mexico. And he sent this poem to us, a recording of it himself, he himself narrating it, just at the turn of the year. So you'll hear he's wishing everyone a happy new year and us a happy new year in it, which is very nice of him. But it's a really fantastic piece.
Happy New Year, Nick, Tom and Anthony. Or as they say in this neck of the woods, Feliz Año Nuevo. This is Gavin in Guadalajara, wishing you all the best for 2021. And inspired by last week's profundities of Kyle's dystopian epic of hirsute hipsters and gothic coffee shops opining forcefully about FPL, I've decided to put pen to paper, or in this case, fingers to touchscreen. So this is called 2020, 20 Verses, 20 Curses. The first question is the meter. Which one should I choose? Maybe iambic pentameter, or perhaps a haiku. Or perchance like William Shakespeare with a sonnet that's heart-torn. But if FPL is my true love, then it is a love forlorn. With the alluring promise of fantasy, the game is now afoot. But back in harsh reality, deep digs the cut. With players benched and others sick, no fans and stadia closed. The game, it speaks of poetry, but offers me nought but prose. Prepare for the doubles, hold on to your chips. Above all, beware the blanks. But with each unending squad rotation, once more my overall rank sinks like a stone, further neath tossed waves, all the while my sub-goalie continues to make saves. Oh, captain, my captain, wherefore art thou? Wrapped in a COVID bubble? What hope rests now? Perhaps my bench can steady the ship and ride out the storm as my mini leagues slip from my hands once again since Project Restart. This game has done nothing but break my poor heart. Captain fails and COVID voids, mediocrity of the eon, as I languish somewhere just outside 2.45 million. With each Leeds goal fest, oh, had I bought into the fuss, or for each City attacker that Pep's left on the bus. I shake my fists and curse ye gods. A clean sheet would be handy. I put my faith in Kane and Son, but the hulls come for Fernandez. And as for Salah, the Egyptian king, he shall crush those he opposes. Except this week he faces Red Sea United and their in-form striker Moses. I take point hits and roll the dice and build team value slowly. But all the while, my best scoring man is still my alternate goalie. Is there any hope in sight? Perhaps a change of luck. But the light at tunnel's end is but a fast oncoming truck. Yet I struggle on regardless. Some arrows green, more often red. And I tune in optimistically to hear pearls of wisdom said by Anthony, Nick and Tom. What's the latest? What have I missed? Who scored 3 bonus points? And who got the assist? Perhaps their inside knowledge can bring me in the know. I may not win the game at large, but perhaps just Mexico. So farewell 2020, 12 months of chaos and discord. At least it's Fantasy Bundesliga, where last week I got up to 4th. But FPL is a cruel mistress who taunts me over and again. I'd like to bid her adieu, but for now, I'll just say Auf Wiedersehen.
Isn't it absolutely spectacular, lads? Like, multiple languages. Awesome. Yeah. Multiple languages. Really, really nicely knitted in FPL allusions and talk. Oh, just really, really spectacular stuff. And thanks so much for that. You'll find Gavin on Twitter at Gavin_Doyle_IE. And he's well worth a follow, even just for his poetry, it seems. He's really got a talent for that. So thanks so much for sending that in, Gav. If you want to have something featured on the correspondence section, you can just email us to whogottheassist@gmail.com. We'll take recordings, as you've now heard for the first time. And we'll take poetry, we will take questions, whatever it is on your mind. It might be addendums to this pod. It might be questions about FPL, the meta that it is. It might be just questions about us. This is a very versatile slot, so fire it in and we will get to it at some point, lads.
Just imagine the slot doing gymnastics. I'm not sure what the slot would like look like in one's mind's eye, but there's something.
You see, that's the thing, Tom. The slot can look like whatever you want it to be, and that's the beauty of correspondence.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually imagining, you know, like the Gmail logo, like on a trapeze or something. I need to stop taking those pills. Anyway, let's move on to the questions. And the first one this week is a fairly obvious one. It is the aftermath of Kevin De Bruyne's withdrawal, unfortunately, in the 58th minute. Not that I'm bitter about that. It's costing me points on a triple captain, and you got 20. Oh, and you got, yeah, that's really good. Anyway, I digress. But yeah, it's a KDB-less Man City this week with loads of questions on this. Ben Pelling, JD Pandolfini, and Triple Nutmeg asked about City players in the wake of KDB's injury. And I guess FPL tips as well. Harry puts it quite nicely. He asks, you know, is Man City midfield now a trap? Should we be looking elsewhere for our KDB replacement? Nick, what do you reckon here?
Yeah, I would disagree with calling Manchester City a trap. I'd certainly say there are a few options out there for them. Obviously, we know from the past that there's a little bit of risk of rotation out there, but I certainly think there's a few assets that are worth calling out. But firstly, I'd want to mention the fixtures. Again, West Brom, Sheffield United and Burnley up next. West Brom looking particularly ripe for the taking, having conceded the most goals in the league with 43, which is 9 more than any other team. They've conceded the most shots as well. The only team with triple figures for shots on target, 119. We do know they've now got Big Sam at the helm, so he's obviously trying to look to shore up that defence, but still I can imagine a big score for City. So I think the assets actually that I'd probably say are the best choices, at least in the midfield, are Gundogan and Sterling. I'm actually pretty interested in Sterling myself, just as a straight replacement. I've got the money, obviously, because I'm selling De Bruyne and he's around the same price. So I'm thinking that could be quite a nice differential this week. Gundogan, he's obviously the cheap alternative that we saw in the market forces. He's had 4 goals in 5 games and it's only 5.5 million. Both of these guys were rested in the cup as well, which is a positive, I think, because probably means they're going to start in a league and Pep's going to be pretty peeved off with half the team that started in the cup this week. And they're probably all going to be on the naughty step as well after going 1-0 down against Cheltenham. So I know it's a risk. We've done this in the past trying to predict him, but I'm feeling relatively confident that these guys are going to start. So I think that's a good shout. A few people calling out Foden as another option. Of course, he's an option. Scored, but the problem is scored against Chelsea and Brighton and then didn't play against Palace. He's only actually started 4 of the last 13 Premier League games. So despite the talent that he obviously is, I feel like with him, the risk is still a little bit high.
Fair enough. I think on Sterling, I just wonder if you weren't interested in him when one of the best chance creators in the world in Kevin De Bruyne was fit, why are you suddenly interested in him when he's absent? I can see why the straight stop appeals by some sense of kind of logic, but it feels a bit of a shortcut to me. I don't know, with Kevin De Bruyne out, it makes sense to decrease investment in City's attack. We've got a question on their defence in a minute. But nonetheless, as you pointed out, Nick, you know, City got good fixtures. And in my view, the Gundog is the guy there, the Gundog wagon, as I perhaps call that. You know, decreasing my investment from 11.8 million to 5.5 million reflects the reality that this guy is not De Bruyne. But he does have the data. You know, he's got the third most shots and the second most shots in the box in the last six. And the money you free up, a gargantuan amount of money you free up, means that you can invest elsewhere. So maybe you'll put money into their defence, you know, upgrading your 4.0 piece of trash to Diaz. Or maybe next week you'd be looking at kind of saying, oh, you know what? Well, you know, I'm not too sure about Bamford anymore. Maybe I'll get Kane for the game against Brighton. I mean, with KDB, I know that Gundog was getting forward a little bit and he may head back a bit without Kevin De Bruyne. But he's 5.5 million and he's on penalties. And he's still playing for a team which creates a lot of chances. He's 5.5 million, I'll say that again. So we can align our expectations with that price tag. We're removing a player in Kevin De Bruyne who has underwhelmed for that price tag and getting a player at 5.5 who perhaps would meet or exceed our expectations for the amount that we're paying. It's all a bit of a pump. I'd rather not run a comparison with last season without when KDB was out for a little bit because it's a different beast and things like that. We need to see how Pep sets up without his talisman, but I'm probably on the Gundo wagon. I mean, Anthony, what do you think about this? And are there any other replacements out there? Because I'm aware that we have just focused on the Man City's keeping with Man City with your KDB replacement.
So I think you guys have kind of touched upon the two important sides of this. And one is that, okay, City are still a good team, even without Kevin De Bruyne. In the last six game weeks, even though they haven't been in blistering form, they've been right up there across the league, second for goals, second for shots in the box. They've hit the post four times as well in that time. XG is second as well, but they have been quite reliant on set pieces for that XG, much more reliant than the rest of the top five. And of course, Gundogan has benefited from that already. And Gundogan himself is miles ahead of other fit City assets in terms of underlying data. And I think I'd agree with you, Tom, that if you were looking at a City attacking asset, I would think I would look to him, not Raheem Sterling, who, as you say, hasn't been of interest to us at his price point, considering the other elite players that there are who are just more appealing. So I guess when you're talking about then that, okay, we've looked at the City assets, Gundogan is a good replacement there in midfield, then you're talking about who would you be looking to bring in? And of course, an awful lot of people have sold Son with the double game week in mind. And Spurs do have Liverpool this week, but then in spite of everything, they do have a few good fixtures interspersed with a few more difficult ones. They might have the honour of getting Frank Lampard sacked at the rate things are going in game week 22 at Chelsea. So that isn't even a fixture to fear, aside from the Liverpool one. And Liverpool's form isn't exactly spectacular, as we've seen as well. So Son, I think, is probably the player that we're going to see quite popular here. But of course, there are cheaper options too. And this ties in with a question we've had from Hindu Monkey, who asked us if Barnes or Madison are on our minds now with Vardy ruled out. So of course, with KDB is the gap in midfield that a lot of people have, and Vardy is the Leicester gap that people might be trying to fill or hoping that Barnes and Madison can fill. So it makes sense, I guess, to be looking at these two players from two different perspectives. And I think when you look at those two players, traditionally, I think what we would say is that Harvey Barnes is wasteful and that he gets lots of chances, but doesn't necessarily score them. Now,
yes.
Interestingly, over the last six game weeks, he's actually overperforming his XG from open play, which is 1.72, and he's managed to get three goals, and that's from 16 shots. Mm. Now, he has played 120 minutes more, though, than James Maddison in that period, who has had an XG from open play of 0.67, which is a hell of a lot less than Barnes, but has got three goals as well from it and 12 shots. But only four of those shots came from in the box. So I think you can kind of see that you're looking at a very different player in terms of position as he actually shows out for Leicester, even though they're both rated as midfielders in the game. So both are players that have good days, and Leicester themselves are obviously doing quite well at the top of the table. And they're sixth for XG. They're the second biggest overperformers in spite of that, but they are still good assets and definitely worth thinking about, lads. Would you say so?
Yeah, definitely. I think despite the fact there's fewer minutes, just boiling it down to the key kind of metric, Madison's only 1 point behind Barnes over the last six, so 34 points for Maddie, 35 for Barnes. And as you said, the data is a little bit, it is very similar. It's just that Madison's obviously got that creative edge to what he does, and Barnes takes a lot more shots. The quality of those shots, however, I'd say is fairly low. So while he's got the volume, he does not have the quality behind that volume. And obviously, we all remember the hat trick against Aston Villa, especially you, Anthony. But I think that was maybe one of those weeks where everything went right for him.
It literally caused lockdown.
Yeah. So like, it was the last game, wasn't it?
Yep.
But if you watch him play, like, he is some 9 out of 10 times he's a complete headless chicken. Especially, you know, being a Vardy owner, watching him play, it's just been, it's a terrible experience. He's always running into blind alleys. Like, Vardy's run on his in space. What does Barnes do? He hits to the byline, and suddenly, you know, the ball goes off, or he runs into the defender because he's overplayed.
I'd like to distance myself from this extreme language. Headless chicken. He's not that.
He is so annoying to watch. Like, because obviously I've had Vardy all the time, so I'm looking at it through that lens. Where I'm just like, well, you could release him there, and he's off. He goes down the channel. Well, what are you doing, bro? Just pass it to Vardy. I've got a goal for my FPL team. Like, it's one of those ways that you look at it. I appreciate that I'm slightly overstating it. But Maddison, yeah, I think that Maddison would be my choice of the two. At the risk of getting into the as. Camp, for which I'm going to need to have a shower because I'm a little bit dirty for embracing one of those players that he loves. But no, he's got a nice mix of the offensive and the creative sides of his game, as you mentioned, Anthony. And I think that he might be the one that I'd like, especially against Leeds. And so the idea is this week I watch him and Barnes against Everton, and the week after that Leeds game, followed by the Fulham game, it'll be worth having, I think, one of them if I can. And because I'm selling Kevin De Bruyne and probably for Gundo, I can sell Suchet for either one of them. And it is quite nice to be able to have the Everton game just to size up which one I really want. But leaning Maddison as being the guy.
Yeah, I think a lot of your frustrations with Harvey Barnes are ultimately because he doesn't pass to Jamie Vardy. I think the headless chicken comparison is perhaps a little bit harsh. I mean, ultimately, he does get a lot of goal attempts, so that's always a positive.
Poor goal attempts.
He's a selfish player, but we like selfish players, and his shot accuracy is actually pretty decent, to be honest. This season, it's 46.2%, which is higher than the likes of Bruno, Salah and Rashford. And it's only really Son that's had better shot accuracy than Barnes out of the sort of top 20 midfielders for goal attempts. So I wouldn't really
a restrained sharpshooter or headless chicken. So, that's what you've got.
So a restrained headless chicken.
His shots, you can't say that all his shots are high and wild in the same way that
I didn't say that. I said that he should pass it to Jamie Vardy. I didn't say well,
he doesn't pass it. But you know, we do like selfish players in FPL a little bit. We like the likes of Charles and who would never pass. So it's not a concern. I think Maddison is an interesting one. He's done pretty well in the last few games. What I did notice though is just his decline really in the past few seasons. So this season he's only created 32 chances, which ranks him 10th out of all midfielders in 19 games, which is an easy sum to do by looking at the last couple of seasons. So last season he was fourth for chances created with 78, and the year before that, which was his first in the Premier League, is first with 99 chances created. So he's declining in terms of what his output is. We used to compare him used to say he was better than Jack Grealish because he was putting in the performances. Now it seems like a completely ridiculous and daft thing to say that everyone regrets. And it's also the same actually with goal attempts. So 83 goal attempts in his first season, 74 in the second, and now 33 this campaign, which will be 66 multiplied by two. So that's a little bit of concern, I guess, with James Maddison, though. Of course, we're always looking at the nearest of futures. In the last three games, he's scored in every single game. So perhaps he's turning a corner again with his form.
See, the thing with Maddie, sorry, Tom, to go one more time on him. The thing with Maddie, and I think if you were listening to his post-match interview that he did the other day, he was talking about himself, how he's playing kind of as a six, so effectively a defensive midfielder. And then he's trying to add more goals to his game by kind of breaking into the box late and inevitably taking long shots as well. But he's certainly not going to be a player that you're going to find getting tap-ins at all frequently. But he is, of course, on the odd set piece. So that's what makes Maddison interesting. And I guess what you're doing with him is backing quality if you decide to bring him into your team. His chance production has fallen. Like you noted his season-long stats. And of course, he missed quite a lot of minutes at the start of the season, though he was like in and around the squad. So if you even look in the last four game weeks in terms of chances created, he's absolutely nowhere near the high ranks there. He's extremely far down, so far down that I might get arthritis in my finger trying to scroll down the list to see how far down he is. So you kind of give you an idea of just, he's a very different player to what we came to know in the league, probably much more quality over quantity, whereas he used to be Mr. Quantity in terms of shots and creativity.
Yeah, no, indeed. I just feel like I should insert a small disclaimer here, but I could well end up with Barnes and completely deny this character assassination that I embarked on Everton Place. Just spooling back all the way to the initial question a long time ago, it feels like now, on the KDB replacements. There's one guy we should probably mention as well, which is Marcus Rashford. So I'm assuming most people have Bruno Fernandes. I'm assuming that in terms of, you know, buying Liverpool players, if you if you're interested in Salah or Mane the last few weeks, who knows? If you're interested in a player like Grealish, I'm assuming that those kind of moves do look like they're pretty obvious. So we're kind of going for the sort of person who's got those players. What do I do next? A player worth mentioning is Marcus Rashford, just because maybe doubling up with him and Bruno might be a good idea for the next little run for United, which is actually not too bad at all. I had a look at it earlier on, and I was surprised that it's kind of flown under the radar a little bit. Sheffield United at home, I'm assuming that'll be a massive Bruno captaincy. So again, that compound differential idea, having him and Rashford might be really useful for that. The bottom
may also be just to go into our compound differential. It might be the only way to get a green arrow from that game specifically is to have more than one United asset, because Bruno is going to be so captained. Even if you captain him, you won't get a huge amount of gain from it.
Yeah, you're just covering your ass, aren't you? But Sheffield United, Arsenal away, Southampton, Everton at home, so two home games in a row, West Brom away, and then Newcastle at home, 20-25, that's six good games in a row for Marcus Rashford, who for all intents and purposes has just been always the bridesmaid, never the bride, all the way back into Project Restart. Like Martial and Bruno have both kind of taken, in Restart, obviously Martial and Bruno have just taken all the love. And poor old Dr. Marcus has just been left by the wayside, hasn't he? Over the last six, he's been all right. He's done okay. So, for example, compared to Maddison, his XG is, you know, 2 over the last six compared to Maddison's 0.22. He's had more shots in the box than Maddison, same amount as Harvey Barnes did, same amount of shots, actually. And he's had far more touches in the box as well. Like, and he does at times interplay with Martial, so him and Martial's opposition. And you have Rashford being the number 9. Of course, he's now a midfielder, whereas last year he was a striker. And he's one of those players as well whose ownership is actually very, very low because of the constant disappointment, because of the fact that he's kind of failed to really fire the imagination in people looking for this sort of player, down to 13.1% ownership now. And I think that he could be one of those players who, if you are looking to climb, has the fixtures and has kind of the ability to kick into that level of form, as we saw last year. I think when Nick, you owned him, actually. But he could be one of those players who, if you are looking for one of those sort of climate differentials, might be worth looking at. Nick, what do you reckon about your old mate Rashford? Would you be looking at getting him in?
Yeah, I'd strongly consider him as an option. I think he certainly, as you mentioned, Manchester United have some great fixtures as well. And he's certainly one of the sort of the top performing midfielders in the game at the moment. I think there's a few options out there. I think personally, I'm probably fancying the Raheem Sterling punt, as much as it was derided earlier as a poor choice with De Bruyne being out of the game. I just fancy him as a really decent differential for this game week. His ownership as well is particularly low as well, 6.3%. So if he returns, it'll be
that is low.
A big win for me. So I'm fancying him over the Rashford punt, but I think Rashford certainly won that. Should be on many managers' radar for this game week. You know, it's a plum home fixture ultimately, isn't it? Manchester United against bottom of the league. So certainly one that, you know, I wouldn't frown against managers bringing in.
Cool. I think we've done that to death, and hopefully that's quite a lot of good midfield KDB replacements for you. Let's move on to the next thing, which I think we're all sort of cagedly trying to avoid, which is where that money may go. So if you're replacing Kevin De Bruyne with anybody, basically, apart from Salah or Bruno, you've suddenly got loads of money. If you didn't own City Defender, you own one, maybe you'd be looking at moving your way, your resources back into that defence. And General Zod actually asked a very good question about this. He asked, you know, is defensive differentiation the way to go now? Because people are looking at such similar sorts of template attacks. Obviously, with Kevin De Bruyne out, there are a few options kind of showing up, but eyes really are turning to Man City's backline. FPL Dougal, for example, asks, is triple up the way to go? Our friend Mitchell Sterling, you know, had that triple up this week and really reaped the dividends of that. I mean, it's absolutely huge, isn't it? Like, some defences this double game really carry people. I mean, obviously, I'm not sure John Stones is going to score a brace again anytime soon. Well, I don't own him now, so I hope he does, but I'm not sure it's going to happen. But what really, you know, surprises me about all of this is that looking at the ownership of Manchester defence, it is still really low. Like I'm shocked, flabbergasted by that. None of them, I don't think, are about 20%. It is easy points, and I really wish I did it. And obviously hindsight's a beautiful thing and makes you look very, very stupid. And my God, looking at those numbers, I feel very stupid now.
Yeah, it's actually interesting, Tom. You've picked up on the same detail I did. And, you know, we're being asked here about double ups and triple ups. And that's definitely people who are looking at the City defence through the lens of FPL Twitter and people posting pictures of John Stones and other City defenders this week on their timeline. Even in my rank tier, you're looking at 30.7% is the most owned of those players. And that's Stones, Cancelo and Diaz are about 26-25% each as well. And Ederson actually has fairly decent ownership as well, kind of double figures. So they're both all in. They're all interesting ones. And I think when it comes to City, we talked about Hundawan earlier. I think that you, really one of the questions you need to ask yourself is, do you think that your third City defender or Ederson would outscore Gundogan over the next few weeks? And even if you think about the last six, Stones 49, Gundogan has 44, Diaz 42, and then you've Ederson and Cancelo both on 31 points. So, you know, there is obviously a bit of a difference there. I think Ederson, you know that you're not going to get any bonus points from him and not many save points, but there is the consistent clean sheets if you believe in those. Whereas Cancelo, you've got the rotation risk, rest in peace me, in the double game week. So that's kind of what you need to consider. I think you should be looking at the double up. I think you should probably be considering the triple up with that basic, do you want Hundawan or do you want Cancelo, Stones, Ederson, pick name that's appropriate for your team.
Yeah, I think with Ederson, you've got the Martinez factor, the monster that is Nick Pope. And I think obviously it's harder to move the goalkeeper around unless you're wildcarding. But no, I absolutely agree. It is pretty much a straight shooter, isn't it? Because the prices are in a similar locale as well in terms of you know, your Cancelo or your Diaz to your Gundo wagon. You're going to probably have to go all the way up to, you know, Foden or something. And you know, do you really want to do that? We didn't mention Bernardo Silva, for example, earlier on. He could be another player who does come through. I mean, really, that kind of Stones Diaz sort of duopoly is probably going to be one of those things that does persist for a while. Nick, what do you reckon here? I mean, defense in general, is that the way to differentiate at the moment? Do you see the big at the back, your kind of signature move, coming back, do you reckon?
Yeah, it might do, to be honest, especially if you're talking about people moving money from De Bruyne to Gundogan and you've got extra 6 million to play with. Why not kind of go with four you know, expensive centre backs? And actually, to be honest, this game week, it was all about the defenders, the midfielders and the attackers. Apart from perhaps Antonio, did absolutely nothing. The teams with the huge scores had the likes of Stones, the likes of Diaz and Soufal and James Justin, with these kind of monster scores. And, you know, if you went five at the back, you would have probably smashed it. So, yeah, I think there is a case potentially for expensive defenders. Obviously, the Manchester City ones, I'm looking at Stones. I was looking at him anyway before his brace, unfortunately. But I've got Kurt Zouma to get rid of, so it is quite an easy move for me, that one. So that's definitely something I'm considering there. Obviously, I think it's worth highlighting the Manchester United defence as well. Plenty of options there. But, you know, Sheffield United at home up next, that's probably going to be a clean sheet guaranteed, isn't it? And after that, it's quite a nice run, as you said. Arsenal, potential clean sheet. Southampton, potential clean sheet. They've got games against West Brom and Newcastle as well, so you can keep them for quite a while, someone like Maguire, and you might get a goal that's not labelled a foul at some point as well. So, yeah, I think United defenders potentially could be part of a big at the back element. I think the other team actually I wanted to talk about quickly was Aston Villa. I know a lot of us own Martinez already, so we might not be considering doubling up, but they've certainly been very solid as well over this period. And yeah, they've got 9 clean sheets over 19 games now. Actually, I think it's less than 19 games because they've had a few cancellations. So they've got some double game weeks coming up as well, which are good time to invest in Aston Villa. And they've got Burnley, Southampton, West Ham, Arsenal, Brighton as their next five. So could be another three, potentially even 4 clean sheets in there. You know, probably not, but you're going to get some clean sheets from the likes of Matt Target or something that only cost you 4.6 million. And he's rocked up with an assist and some bonus tonight as well.
It feels like they could potentially be the new Southampton or something like that. In fact, they've been pretty defensively solid for a while. We documented them on the last pod. So that could be a nice kind of under the radar pick. Let's move on to the next question. We did not, in that defensive discussion, mention Robertson or Trent Alexander-Arnold, and that would probably be one of those things that would be unthinkable at the start of the season, unthinkable at many points of this season. But Liverpool rip-off is one of those things that has been coming up in the zeitgeist a little bit. FPL Osmo asks, what do we do with Liverpool assets? With Kevin De Bruyne injured and Man City defensive options less than 6 million, do we hold and hope things turn around as we've got lots of spare cash? I mean, I love to see what people are doing if they're saying, I'm selling Salah this week. Where's it going? What are you doing? If you're also, if Kevin De Bruyne and Vardy are also up the equation, what are you doing with that money? Or he asked, do we just get rid? I think Liverpool were quite an interesting one just to have a look at, actually. So I did a comparison of the last 6 weeks and the 6 weeks before that. So I did a comparison of game week 14 to 19 and game week 8 to 13. And as a team, what's happened is that their shots on target has hugely decreased, and obviously goals have as well. But a lot of measures have remained stable. So things like, you know, shots in the box, big chances. There's been a slight drop off in XG, but they've had more shots in this last period and haven't really scored very many, in fact, at all. It's just that the quality has diminished. Defensively, actually, they're better than between 8 and 13. They've had far lower big chances conceded, for example, and far lower XGs conceded too. That is this kind of stat anomaly has been mentioned by quite a few people on Twitter outside of the FPL sphere too. So Grace from Football and also James York from StatsBomb have said things to this effect. Grace said, for example, that per the Understat data, the chance of Liverpool scoring zero goals in the last four is a measly 0.16%, which is madness. I mean, they've had 72 shots in that time. And I looked into this a little bit more. Their XG in the last four has been 5.52, which is half of Man City, incidentally. But there have been no goals. What's happened? The quality of shooting has diminished. So the four before this, their XG was 9.9 and they scored 15 goals. Of course, that was fueled by Palace, in which they scored just below half of that number. And it's also crazy to see the quality of chances decline too. So between game weeks 12 and 15, their XA was 7.8. In the last four, it was just 5.62. There's also the extra game in the last four as well. So it's last four game weeks rather than last four games. This is where the eye test becomes really important. I saw, again, a few kind of people said, I didn't watch the game, but their stats are amazing. I don't really understand what's going on. I mean, if you do watch the games, again, we're not eye test wankers here. We know that we are always going to favour the stats. Data-driven insights is what we do. But if you watch the games, you know they look flat. They're out of ideas. And The Athletic this week were reporting that it's a second coming of Klopp's funk that he experienced at Dortmund, where again, all we did was just work hard on plan A rather than scratch together plan B. And we see this a lot of the time with managers who've kind of won everything and struggled to motivate the team a little bit more. I remember Ancelotti and Chelsea, for example, just went through that period of like 12 and 13 games where in press conferences, he'd just say, we've got to focus. That's all he had to say because he was just like, I don't know what to do. Like my players just don't want to perform at the moment because they've won everything. I'm struggling for ideas. Nonetheless, I do expect them to start scoring again. But there is a bit of a tough run coming. Nonetheless, for me, I'm not sure if their top priority sells currently, looping back to what I said before, because there are other fires in loads of people's teams. I don't know what people are doing with Salah. I can see why I'd be selling the likes of Robertson, even though his underlying stats are pretty decent. I'm just not sure if their top priority sells currently. Anthony, what do you reckon? Liverpool guys.
So for in my own team, personally, I only have Mo Salah. And I think just because I have bigger fires to fight, you can read that as Kevin De Bruyne, he's going to survive in my side for at least another week, and I think he'll survive through that because we were talking about effective ownership earlier, because his effective ownership is going to remain high. And whilst Liverpool do have a number of tough fixtures starting off with the Spurs game, there are good ones in there too, and as you say, Tom, I do think they're going to start scoring again, and like they're not going to continue this like unbelievable barren run for sure, even if they are playing quite flat.
It's amazing, it really is. It's like Gamba's fallacy writ large, when you just say, like, if someone said to me like 2 games ago they're not going to score another 2 games, I'd just be like, you're an idiot. That's just not going
to
happen.
Yeah, you'd have just been like, there's somebody is going to do something, you know, someone's going to have a howler, they'll get a penalty, you know, like just any of these kind of things that happen to good teams. But nope, hasn't happened, but it will happen. As for their defenders, I was looking at Robertson, have continued to look at Robertson and have just never managed to get Robertson into my side because I can now get away with not putting him into my side for another few weeks and I can deal with the other fires that I have to fight. I will avoid buying him basically and I'll just leave them kind of settle down and get more players back fit and start playing a bit better overall, I guess. Nick, you do have Andy Robertson in your side, do you not?
still got him. I've got Robertson and Salah. And obviously, yeah, like you guys, I've got some other fires that need to be sorted in my team. So both of those guys are going to be around for me for the next game week. They're playing Spurs, so I fully expect them to finally turn up again, as they always do against us. And after that, they've got West Ham and Brighton. So, you know, I think they're pretty decent fixtures, to be honest. So they'll probably get the stay of execution for those games anyway, regardless of the performance against Spurs. After that, you know, there's a couple of really tough games, three sort of in a row that are quite tricky. So, you know, if Salah still looks dreadful at this point, he's going to have to go, isn't he? Same with Robertson. No, Robertson, we're saying, has not been doing very well. He's actually the top scoring defender in the game. So maybe that's a fallacy as well. So, you know, it makes sense, though, I guess, to a certain extent, if you are one of those managers that wants to get City defence in desperately and you're looking at Robertson and saying, actually, he's my biggest cash cow to get in the likes of Diaz or Stones, then that kind of makes sense to a certain extent. But, you know, we're selling Salah. We always say this, you know, there's such a high risk, isn't it? The ownership. I thought I could get away with not owning him for basically one game and got punished when he performed and got 16 points in 33 minutes. So, you know, there is that risk always with him.
Yeah, I just feel like I've got Robertson. He just basically stays by default because I've got KDB to sell and I've got Vardy to sell. So he's like the third piggy bank or fourth piggy bank along the way. Like, of course, I wish that I'd sold him for a Diaz or a Stones ahead of last week. But I mean, just the outcome shouldn't probably overshadow the thought process, which I still think was sound. It's just one of those brutal 50-50 that does happen. But yeah, no, interesting question. It'll be really interesting to see where Liverpool go from here. But as we've said, I can't imagine it's going to continue in this kind of barren fashion. Final question this week, I thought it was quite an interesting one to throw in. Obviously, it segues us nice into transfers and captains. But it is Captain Unobvious. So Gad Effendi asks if we should be considering non-premium captains now with our captaincy. So City defenders, I've seen a few people kind of saying, oh, you know, I'm captaining Cancelo against West Brom. And I can see why. Obviously, he got the assist against Cheltenham. So maybe that's his imminent assist spaffed and he's not going to get on for a while. But, you know, without De Bruyne, maybe, you know, he's a creative he's going to be needed. Or Antonio, for example. So hat tip to Taylor Cross, who added me this week with triple caps and Antonio. I created a little photo of Randy Marsh from South Park with his balls in a wheelbarrow and photoshopped his face onto it. And I was just like, wow, okay, good luck, mate. And absolutely came through with him. So really awesome stuff. Is it the time for us to kind of sit back and kind of think, oh, actually, the premium players aren't really doing the job for us right now. So maybe we look elsewhere. Maybe we look at the likes of Antonio or look at the assist defenders and think, oh, maybe it's high time that we gave these guys a go. Of course, Bruno Fernandes, Sheffield United, I expect we're all going to say he's our captain. But is it time to go off the beaten path, lads?
I don't think it is time to go off the beaten path. You talked about Taylor Cross going off the beaten path. We had another listener, Josh Dolphin, who triple captained John Stones as well, who had a particularly good game week thanks to that. But I don't think that this is the time. I don't think there's ever really a time to go totally mad on captaincy. Like, okay, yes, is there, you know, individual discrete opportunities to captain outside of the meta? Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've talked about it before and we'll probably see it again, that defenders do, when they have a good chance of getting two clean sheets and might get a return going forward, they do offer particularly interesting value in double game weeks. But that said, going back to our effective ownership discussion, I think you'd be extremely brave to not captain the likes of Bruno Fernandes this week, and it's Bruno Fernandes this week, but it's going to be someone else the week after that, that if it goes wrong for you, and the thing is that there's a reason why they're the premium players that are highly owned who score all the time. If it goes wrong for you, and it may well do percentage-wise, I don't really want to be on the other end of that. I've been kind of building a half-decent rank by being consistent and not going totally wild with my captaincy, and I'm not going to change that now.
Exactly, I'd agree with that. I think we've talked about the unwritten rules in the past, that the obvious captain pick is obvious, and I'm going to be sticking with that for now. And Captain Bruno, I think when I've experimented in the past with less obvious picks, for instance, this season I picked Ings against West Brom. More famously, a lot of managers picked Callum Wilson against Norwich last season, like myself, and it's just fallen flat on its arse. So, yeah, for me, it's going to be the safe, boring captain pick. you know, avoid the damage of the effective ownership as well, which we talked about earlier. So, yeah, going with the captain obvious as opposed to the captain unobvious.
Like, I think there's a bit of an obsession with trying to be the guy that has the likes of the Antonio or the John Stones.
Matias Pereira this week.
Matias Pereira, yeah, yeah. And like post that on Twitter and have that moment. Try to be the guy instead who can post a screenshot of like 10 green arrows in a row. Because I guarantee you that that's going to look an awful lot better for your rank long term as well.
Yeah, I think you've all basically been looking at my notes because all I wrote was link back to EO, which is, yeah, I mean, great. If you want to captain someone like Matias Pereira and it comes off you, fan-bloody-tastic. The fact is that a lot of the time, if people do captain outside of the well-trodden path, they disappear from Twitter and they're not heard of again for a few weeks, and then they come back because something else has happened. Other than that, you know, they've just screwed up. A lot of the time, obviously, there's the appetite for kind of risk rewards. Obvious captains where I can is probably how I go as well. And to be honest, I've been so crap at captain this season that I'm beginning to think the decision just goes out of my hand entirely and I just give it to the algos, you know? But really, it is about picking your moments. If you're going to go for a differential captain, harking back to that EO discussion this week, it is going to be one of those things where if you don't go Bruno Fernandes, and I can see why you wouldn't, you are going to be absolutely smashed if he hauls and your captain does not equal or better that haul. That's just the reality of the situation. Some people do like to live dangerously. It's just one of those things where, do I want to live dangerously this week? Do I have an alternative that I trust? Is Cancelo, for example, going to equal the threat value of Bruno Fernandes? Probably not.
Will he play?
If I own Rashford, then maybe I'd be more interested in that. But as it is, probably not. But if you have one of those weeks where it's a split pin, so say there's, you know, four or five captains in the mix, maybe that's a good week to kind of say, oh, well, you know what, I'm going to go for option three or option four and see how that goes. That's one of those times when you can kind of, you know, look at the non-premium options a little bit and kind of think, oh, I'm going to go for that sort of captain, because you're not going to be too punished. Again, linking back to EO. So I guess you know all of our captains. It sounds like a blanket for Bruno Fernandes, and I think it's going to be a blanket for Bruno Fernandes for everybody, folks. Spoilers. But let's talk about our transfers instead. Anthony, any idea what you're doing yet?
I'm going to be selling Kevin De Bruyne, and I think I will probably just end up running with the meta and getting in Hunduan, just purely because I kind of want to have that budget freed up to make another move afterwards. I'm not going to take another hit. I'd barely taken any hits all season, and I've taken two consecutive hits, sorting myself out for the blank and double. So I think settle things down, you know, good consistent captaincy pick, and see where I'm at after that. And as well, we're waiting to get a little bit more news on doubles and blanks going forward, and I can kind of get an idea of a strategy with all of my chips intact, including the wildcard.
Yeah, so I'm making similar moves, as in I'm selling De Bruyne, but I'm thinking potentially about Sterling. It doesn't free up lots of cash to do other moves, but rather than have sort of 7 million sitting in there in the banks, that's the way I'm viewing it at least. I'm probably going to be a hit, unfortunately, again, because I've got to get rid of Kurt Zouma because he's been dropped by Frank. So it's probably going to be Stones in as well. Just triple up on Manchester City, load them up for the next three games and hope for the best.
Yeah, I'll be jumping on the Gundogan as well. So I think I'm going to do Kevin De Bruyne to the Gundogan, and I'm going to do as well Kilman to Stones, and that leaves me with loads of money in the bank. That leaves me with money to do Suchek to Madison, you know, Vardy to Kane. I've also got some money left over, and so that's a minus four. I'm just wondering whether a minus eight for Jamal Lewis to Diaz is worth it, because there's loads of double game weeks coming up for Man City. It may well give me an instant payoff this week, but fundamentally, it just kind of solves a problem I'm going to have to solve eventually. Because as we said with the effective ownership debate, eventually having one Man City player is going to be the same as having one Chelsea player earlier on in the season. You know, one clean sheet is going to be okay, but you're going to gain through two. So maybe it might be the case of grabbing Diaz, or maybe even, you know, the tainted love of Cancelo and going that way. I just don't know yet. Probably going to jump on the Gundogan and also get Stones in, and then probably leave it until the last minute to decide whether I want Cancelo or Diaz. If I'm probably going to do Diaz, because he's probably one of those players that you just expect to play every game.
I'd say if I was to take a hit, just to give everyone that speculative idea that I might have if I was to run through with it later on, I would finally free myself of the shackles of Rian Brewster, and I would bring in the man with the second highest XG from open play over the last 6 weeks, which is Edinson Cavani playing against Sheffield United, who I think would be an interesting pick to have there on top of Bruno Fernandes to make the most of that EO, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice as well. Yeah, one of those things I'm thinking about as well. Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking about Rashford actually, but thanks for telling me. That's a good tip. Maybe WCA could help someone's outcomes after all.
A good tip on that podcast with tips on it.
On that podcast that we all show up to do. What feels like every month, given how long the last game week was. I think that's a lot for tonight. It's been good to do a proper long podcast, hasn't it, Nick?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done a proper extended podcast. I think the next few are going to be a little bit shorter again, just because of the yeah. time frames of the game weeks, and because they're just one after another, isn't it, at the moment? But yeah, you got the assist. Thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already.
Yeah, as the lad said, midweek round of games coming up, so we will be back on Thursday when these fixtures have concluded. If you have any correspondence, send it to whogottheassist@gmail.com and we will get to it.
Cool. We hope it assisted you. Well done. You did very well on double game week. Commiserations. We're here for you if you didn't. We'll speak to you next week. See you next week.
I was going to do it. I had it ready. I had it written there and everything.
Poor Lee.
Cool. All right, thanks everyone.
Cheers, lads. See you on Thursday.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist? Podcast Network.